In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, I'm going to be talking to Justin Gilchrist about building outbound sales processes. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 363. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products. Whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it, I'm Mike.
And I'm Justin.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. How are you doing this week, Justin?
I am pretty good, apart from a minor injury in the middle of the night last night. But yeah, I'm good otherwise. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
I'm glad you could make it. So part of the reason I'm having you here is because a couple of weeks ago, Rob made this announcement for MicroConf, save the date. And unfortunately, it was wrong, so I kicked him off for the week. So that's his punishment. He's actually converted this week, so he couldn't make it. But the save the date correction is that MicroConf is actually April 29th to May 1st, and then May 1st to the 3rd for the Growth Edition and then the Starter Edition. It's not April 23rd to 26th. So kind of scratch that from a couple of weeks ago. But more back to you, Justin. If you're not familiar with Justin, Justin's a UK-based co-founder of Optimum Feedback. It's a platform designed to help businesses increase the number of customers that they have and increase customer loyalty. He was also the former co-founder of a company called Centurica. It was acquired in 2015, and he's also the author of Digitally Wed, which is a handbook to help you kind of come to terms with buying online businesses and what to look for, what to avoid. And he also invests in some companies. And one of the reasons that I'm having Justin on today is because one of the companies that he had invested in previously had a sales process problem. And that's really the focus of today's episode. So I wanted to kind of walk through that sales process that you came up with and talk to the listeners through what you did to solve those problems and kind of how you came to that. Does that sound like an accurate assessment of what we're doing today and any details that I left out?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate, Mike. That's pretty bang on.
Okay. So I guess lay out the scenario for us. So what problem were you trying to solve in this business? Obviously, it was a sales-related problem, but why was it important and what was the goal of the processes that you were trying to implement?
Sure. So, I mean, to give you some background first on kind of why we were trying to do that, this is a company which I bought, I think, 12 years ago now, and started out as a relatively small company and grew quite organically with sort of no external funding over the years. It's a company, I don't know if any of the guys listening out there have read the book Small Giants, but it's, you know, one of the companies that I really like to think of as a small giant. There's a really good culture here. The people who work here love working here, and it's a great team, and we really put out a sort of market-beating, market-leading service. So this is a company that's now at around 30 employees. It's a company involved in B2B services around food and the logistics of food. So helping mostly blue chip companies organize how their people get fed and providing a lot of the back end services for that. So in this industry, it's a very mature industry, and in this industry, things have always been done a very traditional way, including sales. And the typical way where you're selling B2B is you hire a bunch of telecanvassers or telemarketing people, which now everyone's calling them SDRs, which sounds a hell of a lot sexier, but it was telemarketing when we started. And you got them basically just to dial a cold list until someone said, yes, I'll be interested. They would then book an appointment for a sales rep. The sales rep would go and close or maybe not close, and that would effectively be as sophisticated as your sales cycle would get. But the problem was that we started with that as a strategy. As we started to grow and add more outbound telemarketing reps, this strategy started to mean that we were churning through leads really quickly because they weren't getting multiple touches. It also didn't work well with where technology has gone now, where everything is multi-channel, where you'll have a lead that you'll maybe initially speak to via the phone, you'll send them an email, they will go onto your website, a retargeting cookie will be set, they'll visit you again, they'll get remarketed in social media, in Facebook, for example, they may get an SMS. And the old way of doing things, it doesn't bring all of these things into a holistic strategy for converting that lead into a client. So those were the problems that we were really trying to solve.
So to frame that for the listeners a little bit, the initial problem that you had was trying to reach out to these people and really establish a repeatable sales channel for the business. But the problem that you were running into was that over time, the way of getting people through your sales funnel was really changing, and you had to modify your sales process to meet those changes in the way that people had modified their businesses and the way that they expected to be treated and marketed to, I guess. Is that kind of an accurate way of rephrasing that?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. I mean, I think it's safe to say that things had changed. Like over the last 10 years, things have changed drastically in the amount of sort of ways to market to a person in B2B. Social was around 10 years ago, but it wasn't great for doing B2B. Now what Facebook are doing make it almost essential, you know, as essential as Google PPC was 5 or 10 years ago, if you want to do B2B. So really the problem we had is we had these independent silos marketing to people, but no real cohesion between them. And part of the problem with that is we were not converting at the rates we should have been converting. We were often losing leads in that process who would maybe be called once and never called again. We just needed the way to really bring that all together, but ultimately just get a better ROI on outbound.
Got it. So really, like, things had worked for a while, and then, you know, obviously, like, the world changed around you, and then the existing process that you had in place was no longer working, and it needed to be tweaked or improved and kind of given this overhaul. So I guess to dig into that piece, what was the process that you ultimately came up with? You initially talked about how you were really just going through these leads that you had and phone numbers people call, and then if they were interested, great, schedule a meeting, take them into the next step, but if not, then they kind of got dumped on the floor. How did that change into what you ultimately came up with? How did you come up with that? And what sorts of things did you try to reach whatever that conclusion was?
Sure. So, I mean, one thing I have to say is I'm from sort of both sides of the tracks in that my passion and what I work on day in, day out is SaaS, but I also understand sort of stodgy, old school offline businesses as well. And it sounds ridiculous saying that, you know, this is the way that things were done, but still to this day, in the majority of kind of more mature conventional businesses, the sales process really is telemarketers working in their own silo. And if you're from the world of SaaS, if you're familiar with things like predictable revenue and how outbound SaaS efforts are usually set up, then it seems like it's a really easy, well, not easy, but it seems like it's a really obvious thing. But it wasn't that obvious to us because we'd been doing things for so long in a certain way of doing them. So, I mean, the process that we ultimately came up with really was solving the problem that we'd have leads that we would either purchase or cold leads that would come in. These leads would get contacted or they would get targeted one way or the other. But if that wasn't a yes straight away, a lot of these leads would be lost in the system. And I'm sure most people know that you need to have multiple touches with people over time in order for them to convert. So by our estimation, we were converting probably 25 to 30% of all the people we could have possibly converted, but a lot of these leads were being forgotten about because there wasn't a scalable or repeatable system for maintaining contact with these leads and grading them over time. So the process that we ultimately came up with was more of a campaign approach. So it was a campaign that included multiple phone calls, multiple emails, but also other things like direct mail or retargeting through Facebook or in some cases SMS over time.
So what was it that ultimately led you to kind of incorporating all of these different things? Because I think if you're running your business in a certain way for a long time, you get out of touch with what a lot of these other marketing channels happen to be. And in this particular case, you're really combining a bunch of different channels together. You talked a little bit about the cold calling aspect, the direct mail outreach, SMS messages. Like, what was it that led you to believe that this particular combination of things was going to make a difference for you? Or was it just you did a couple of tests, or were you talking to other people about some of the different sales processes for related businesses? Kind of what led you to this approach?
Yeah, I mean, it was SaaS. You know, it's like we don't realize how fortunate we are working in an industry that is always trying out and testing things. Like, this whole idea of the lean or the agile way of doing things is not necessarily the standard way of doing things in other companies. So we get used to or almost desensitized from the fact that we are often bleeding edge with marketing practices and with the technology that we use. When you take those same marketing practices and those same technologies and apply them to companies and industries where it's not so common, it really does give you an edge.
Yeah, I know a SaaS company that does exactly this. They have physical books that they send out, and they also have postcards that they will send to people as physical mailers. And it's a SaaS application, but because their audience likes things offline, they're kind of older, stodgy, and more ingrained and set in their ways and not likely to change how they typically do business. By using those techniques and getting in front of them, I mean, that's really all you're doing with like email marketing or Facebook ads or anything like that. You're just trying to get in front of people. Well, you know, using those mailers, the physical mailers, is another way to get in front of people. So it's really not any different, except for the fact that it costs more money to send a postcard or a giant envelope in the mail, and your iteration cycle is a lot lower. It's harder to do that. You can't run those tests in like a week. You have to take a couple of months in order to do it. How did you go about like dealing with some of those challenges?
So, I mean, a lot of this was prompted by the fact that we needed to grow and we needed to scale. So we're going from 6 outbound reps to 15 or 4. We haven't recruited all 15 yet, but that's kind of where we want to be. So the first decision was in that we have to find a way of making the process a lot more stable and a lot more sustainable in order to grow to there. And I think you ultimately have two decisions when you have an existing process. You can either make the existing process a lot more efficient. So we could have looked at maybe, you know, how much are we losing from initial confirmation call to meeting, from people maybe cancelling or rearranging the meetings, how much we're losing in the meeting stage, what things could we do there to tighten up those numbers in that funnel. Or we could just look at adding more volume. So if we throw more volume in, then we're going to get more out the end, even if the efficiency stays the same or the conversion rates stay the same. To this day, I can't say I know what the right answer was, but for us, we had a lot of leads and a lot of leads that were becoming old that we needed to get through. So the priority for us really was increasing that volume of leads going through. So that meant hiring more outbound SDRs, but it also meant having a better process, which I can get into the nuts and bolts about what the actual process is, but it meant having a better process for each lead that we call and having a clear strategy and knowing what the outcome for that lead in particular was.
I think what I'd find really interesting is kind of a sidestep here to talk into how it is that you mapped that out, because I've looked at a bunch of different tools for kind of mapping these things out. And what you tend to find is that there are different parts of that process that tend to run in parallel to some extent. So for example, if you send out postcards or something in the mail, that may take a couple of weeks to get there and you don't know whether or not it got through. At least with email marketing, a lot of times you can see whether or not somebody opened it or there's a campaign and there's multiple touch points along that entire way. But when there's any sort of handoff, like somebody gets something in the mail and they're expected to call you, for example, or you know, just because there's a phone number on there. Like, how do you tie those different pieces together? And that's more of a, I think, a technical challenge. But the other side of it is, how do you map these out? Like, do you get a giant sheet of graph paper and draw things out, or do it with a bunch of note cards, or is there a software tool that you can use? Because I think this is where people start to get confused about, how do I put this stuff together and how do I create this, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, like a workflow that I can translate into having software that fulfills all these different needs.
I mean, it's pretty cool that you mentioned mapping out, because the mapping out part really was the part that was the most important for us, because it's wider than just sort of mapping things out for an operational sake, but it actually goes back to recruiting and cost saving. So to give you an example, we have different campaigns, and one campaign might be a lapsed lead campaign. So if a lead's been in the database for 6 months, we previously got somewhere with them, but not all the way, they're technically then a lapsed lead. We may have a lapsed client campaign. We may have a cold lead campaign. We map out every one of these campaigns up front. And by mapping out, I mean, we look at, right, what actions do we want to take first of all? So to give you an example, with a lapsed lead, we'll schedule a call for day zero. So the minute one of our prospectors goes in, sees this, decides this is going to be a good fit for that campaign, they will manually hit the button to add that to our campaign software. So the first thing we do is we schedule a call. 2 days after that call, we'll have an email, and that email will go out from a different person. It's our system, but it's obviously, you know, it comes out as a person. And that generally tries to achieve the same objective of the call, which is touching base, finding out if their details are correct and if they're still in the market for whatever the services that we're offering are. We'll then have another email pre-scheduled for 3 or 4 days after that. But bear in mind, these emails get cancelled if the call gets completed first. But this whole idea of mapping things out, it's not just mapping out what goes out, it's mapping out every outcome from a call. So whenever our SDRs get on the phone and they make a call, our system will show them a list of options when they come off that call based on what happened. So it can be as simple as, did you speak to the contact? Yes or no. If they didn't speak to the contact, it'll ask them if they left a voicemail or if they didn't. If they didn't leave a voicemail, it'll schedule that call to come back for 30 minutes later. If they did leave a voicemail, it'll schedule it to come back for the next day. If they did speak to the person and the person's maybe not ready yet, or there's another decision maker that wasn't there, it will make different decisions based on that too. And the idea is that we're trying to cut down the amount of thinking reps have to do, one, to reduce human error, but two, and most importantly, to make the job a lot more systemized so we can get the same results or the same good results from every rep we hire without having to hire specific kinds of people who just know how to do that. So that has the kind of ripple effect of making our recruitment a lot easier, because we don't have to necessarily recruit people who are superstar SDRs in their own right. But it also makes training easier because we've got less situations or circumstances that we have to sort of role play with people and educate people about. But long term, it means we're saving money because we're hiring less, we've got less churn, and these guys are going out and they're doing a better job from day one.
The way you phrase it, it makes it sound like it's somebody coming from the world of technology or a developer background would have kind of an advantage in putting this together, because really it's just a series of if-else statements where you're checking for certain conditions, and if the SDR actually talked to somebody, then do this, and if they didn't talk to them or if they left a message, do these other things. And that seems the way that it kind of plays out, but how do you go about mapping these things out so you know what to do? Because there's a difference between planning and designing it versus implementing it. Because the implementation, I feel like that's, once you know what needs to be done, implementing it is, I'll say, much more trivial, because then you can just go out and find the tools or plug things into it. But figuring out what needs to be done and where and what the decision points, to me, seems like the hard part. And again, that kind of goes back to, like, how did you do that piece of it? Was it like, I would default to graph paper, but I don't have graph paper that's large enough for stuff like that. So it just seems like then you almost go into like tools. Like, I think a Lucidchart is one that I've come across that allows you to put things on the screen and lay out like a decision tree. I think Gliffy does it as well. Did you look at any things like that? Or was it just you working on this? Did you have a team working on it? I have like a billion questions here.
Yeah, no, it's I'm laughing because we started out using Balsamiq, which is like a mock-up tool that we use for wireframing. And there was kind of three of us working on it. The reason why we use Balsamiq is because it was easier to collaborate. But what actually became really easy in the end, and we ended up, Balsamiq is a brilliant product, but what worked better for us in the end is we bought three whiteboards and stuck them up in each of our offices, and literally just spent time mapping out one process at a time, mapping it out on this like giant whiteboard. I think the whiteboard's about 4 meters wide. And so we could get everything on there. And once we had it on the whiteboard, we'd then probably add post-it notes for things that needed to be done at the various stages. So for example, if we had, you know, day one call scheduled, email scheduled, we'd have a post-it note on the call and the email, and then someone would then write the script for the call and the script for the email, or the email rather, and we'd know those were to-do items. We'd then take the post-it notes off when those items were done. So I'm giving you the most low-tech solution to this as possible, but there's something about pen and paper when I'm planning out. If I don't know the answers, I always prefer to do things on pen and paper. When I do know the answers, that's when I like to use software, because, you know, it's easier for me to put it in and share it with the world. But I think sometimes just having a whiteboard or pen and paper, because you're going to cross off a lot of things, or you're going to look at a lot of things and think, you know, actually this doesn't make sense, or we can tighten this process up. So I think I'm pretty tool agnostic, and I don't think the tool is the most important part. I think getting it documented and getting it down is the important thing. And that advice goes for any kind of marketing automation. So if you're about to use Infusionsoft or Entreport, you know, before you've even considered buying the software, you really should have your marketing process mapped out, at least on paper to begin with. And we originally, you know, we started using a combination of different tools, like those on the call side. We used Woodpecker for emails and Salesloft for the calls. They're both great tools for sort of getting a call cadence going in there. But in the end, we ended up sort of building our own solution in-house, because it was just easier to bring everything on the one roof and have all the information in one system.
Yeah, the reason I kind of dived into that piece of it, like how you mapped it out and how you designed it and what things you tried. You said initially balsamic, and then you switched over and just, you know, use these massive white pores, is because that's an area where I've run into challenges in the past and talking to other people, like that tends to be a big hang up. And I've tried using balsamic before as well. Like I love balsamic, but for that particular thing, it doesn't work well. And I haven't really found a good tool that does work well for that, because really you change things so often that most of the time when you're using those tools to lay out a workflow, it's more challenging to make the changes than it would be if you just had, you know, like some graph paper or a whiteboard and just erase things and move things around. That's the part that is a challenge to deal with. But I think once you get past the point where you've got everything, then it makes sense to take that and implement it in something like, you know, Lucidchart or Balsamic, where you can lay it out and then print it and say, this is what our process looks like, because this is more of a more finalized version of it. When you're just prototyping, I'll say the software actually tends to get in the way, I think.
Sure. I mean, I think the most important thing is getting started. And the problem with software is it sometimes creates, I always get this wrong when I say, is it analysis paralysis or paralysis analysis?
Yeah.
It creates this fear because people are trying to get to the optimum solution and they're trying to have everything in place before they take on this big overwhelming task. But actually we found that the day we started mapping things out is the day we were able to consistently get people to do the right actions rather than leaving it up to their discretion. Because when you leave things up to people's discretion, it doesn't always go the way that you want it to go.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's a fantastic point about like the software just getting in the way and then, you know, trying to make sure that people are all on the same page. So something else that kind of jumped out at me was that you tried a couple of different tools and ultimately you ended up building your own. What was it that made you make that decision? Because building software, especially since this is not really a tech company, I mean, that's not your core function, is to write software for a company that, you know, serves lunches and dinners to other companies. Like that's not what you do. But what made you make that decision? Because that is a big leap from, okay, we're doing our services business over here and that's how we're making money, to, okay, let's build this piece of software as an in-house tool to help us reach more customers and sell more into our channel. Like that's, to me, that seems like a huge leap. What went into that decision-making process?
Yeah, it is. I mean, in hindsight, if you asked me, would I have done it again? I would have, but only just. Like, it was marginal whether it was wise to build this out ourselves. Now, I'm a fan of using everything off the shelf, but I'm also a fan of using technology. So as a company, we won Online Business of the Year last year, which is ironic because no one here sees this company as an online business. But from day one, partly because of my influence and my background, we've always invested heavily in technology. And that has been one of our USPs. That's been one of our main advantages. And we're probably one of the only smaller services company doing what we do that use things like Slack and, you know, GitHub for non-coding things and Intercom on a regular basis, because that's just what we're used to using these in sort of SaaS or technology startups. But I think sometimes being a developer is a bit of a gift and a curse, because you tend to build things when you shouldn't because you can. And I think knowing when not to build and when just to get something off the shelf is equally as important as building, you know, the perfect piece of software. But in this case, because we've started from day one with our own custom management system, we almost have everything under one roof, with the exception of maybe the accounting package. Everything that we have is in this system. So there's actually a huge advantage for us in being able to have everything new in terms of campaigns and marketing and all the information on these leads in one place, rather than having to kind of use APIs to cobble something together and then have to have a dashboard to see what's going on.
All that you just said makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's sometimes like cobbling tools together is actually harder than having just one tool that does everything. Even if it doesn't do everything, even if it's not a best of breed technology where it does everything at the top level, sometimes just having one thing that does everything that you need adequately is more than enough, and it is actually more helpful than trying to deal with data being passed between one tool and another, and hey, why didn't this get there, or was this delayed, or was there an error of some kind? Sometimes those webhooks just don't work.
Sorry to cut in, Mike, just to add one thing which I think's pretty important as well, the whole kind of buying building dilemma. I'd say in hindsight, it always makes sense to build if what you're doing or what you're building for is what you're defining as one of your core expertise, or, you know, you kind of something that's central to your business. And that's why it's really important to know what business you're in. So we worked out we are in the service business as opposed to the product business, or, you know, the specific services that we deliver. And part of that is technology. It's about facilitating what we do through technology. And that's something that's really central to this particular business. So that's why we'll invest probably heavier in technology than other businesses of our size. But that's because that's our business model. I think if you're a SaaS company and you are all about the product, then it doesn't make sense to build third-party tools to help you sell that product. And it sounds ridiculous because you'd think every SaaS company is about the product, but they're not. Someone like HubSpot, in the early days, I see them more being about the distribution of the product. They were a very, very efficient sales machine. So if sales is what you do, or sales is what you want to do, and you need things that you can't easily get off the shelf, then I think it makes sense to build, because that's your core expertise. And then you can really develop a specialism in there that allows you to, you know, recruit quicker, train quicker, and ultimately get the product out to market quicker than your competitors do using off-the-shelf stuff.
You touched on this very briefly, but like, do you also have included in the software that you build kind of like entire lifecycle management for the customers? Like, do you have order processes and stuff in there, or is it really just managing your sales process? And then at that point, it kind of cuts off, and then there's some other system, maybe that some other system that you build or something off the shelf that you're using to do the day-to-day servicing of the customers?
No, we have everything under one roof, and I think that's been one of our main competitive advantages for a while. So everything is connected into the same system. The system that customers see on the front end, the mobile apps that even, you know, sort of dispatch people, drivers use, everything is connected into the same system. And that helps massively. It's a huge investment that you have to make, because it's a time investment and a maintenance investment, but it just gives you that little edge over your competition when they're using off-the-shelf software. And there are things that they can't do, but you can, that are really specific to the customers that you serve, but make a difference, that kind of, you know, add to that overall customer experience.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I guess for the listener who is kind of thinking about this, what is it that you would kind of recommend to get started with? Like, how, like, if you're a solo founder running a business, where would you start looking for, either for resources or in a way to implement this in your own business to do some sort of an outbound sales process? Because I think that most people who are running, like, for example, a SaaS business, when you're starting out, and I've done this with Bluetick, for example, like, a lot of it has to do with outreach in those very early days, because you need to reach out to people because they have no idea who you are. You don't really have the time for tweaking marketing campaigns, and it takes too long to get them started up, but it also takes a while to optimize them to the point that you can make any sort of return on your investment. In the early days, you're really just trying to get in front of people who you think are going to be a good fit, so that you do a lot of outbound stuff. What is it that you would kind of recommend for people to get started with that?
Absolutely. I think when, especially if you're a solo founder, or, you know, if there's only one or two of you in the early days, the outbound stuff you do isn't sales, it's customer development. Like, the first probably 50 clients that you get on board, if you see it as sales, it's going to be a wholly inefficient process, because your cost of customer acquisition is going to be through the roof because of all the time that you put into getting those clients and then making the little tweaks or changes, or even having meetings to decide whether you should change your product roadmap based on what all of these clients are telling you. But I think in the early days, it's more about customer development. So it doesn't need to be as efficient. It doesn't need to scale as much, because you're actually getting something from all the people you speak to, whether they sign up or not. And it's crucial. It's what helps you shape the product and make the product a little bit better than your competition. I think when we originally started doing this, we originally outsourced. So those sort of reps we'd get from telemarketing agencies here in the UK, and we generally pay a day rate of around 120 UK pounds to 150 a day, which is about 170 US. And that would get us a full day of calling. That would get us around 80, 90 dials, 34 connects. And then we'd know from that we'd usually get 3 or 4 appointments. So that was pretty scalable, because we could keep scaling up. And I'd probably recommend that anyone who is thinking of doing this but doesn't know what their numbers are yet, try that out first of all. Find a small agency that can do this, just so you can get up and going, just so you can get an idea of what your numbers are and should be. Personally, I agree with the common advice that it should always be the founder that does the first set of calls, and you should do in order to get an idea of what your script is and what objections people are coming up with and sort of, you know, where you want to go. But at some point, you have to face the reality that you're probably not going to have time to do this as much as you should do to get those sort of next 10 or the next 20 customers on board. And that's the point where it's probably a good idea to outsource, one, just to get data, but two, just to get the ball rolling. Because I think sometimes doing something, although it's not you, and although it's never going to be done as well as if you were doing it, it's better than not doing anything at all because you're busy with a million and one other product-related things or customer support-related things because there's just one or there's just two of you.
One thing to point out there in what you said is there's a distinction between customer development and sales. And I think in this particular context, I'm kind of using them interchangeably because you're right. Like those early days really are about customer development and you're spending way more time on any given customer than you would otherwise, especially in the future, because it's not worth the time to spend with them. But at the same time, you need those early people and it's almost like a lost leader. You have to spend that time in order to learn. So it's not that you are getting a negative ROI on those customers. It's really you're spending the time and money to learn what needs to be done in the future, not like, how do I make this a repeatable process that is going to, you know, scale to infinity and optimize it? Like, your goal is not optimization. Your goal is just have those conversations and learn from it. And that's what you're paying for. Like, that's the time and money investment. Like, the money that you get from them is almost meaningless. I mean, obviously, you know, any sort of revenue helps, but you need to know the stuff that goes into it in order to be able to do anything with that information. Like, you can't operate in a black box.
I think a pretty important thing to realize as well is that the Pareto principle comes into play where 80% of your results are going to come from 20% of all of the things that you try. And with us in the past, we've found that if something new comes along, we will give it a try. Sometimes our execution is poor. Sometimes our execution is great. And I'm sure that affects the end result. But time after time, we've found that outbound for B2B is what works. Outbound as in outbound dials, outbound getting salespeople out to that person. That's what works. We're seeing better results with things like Facebook marketing. We've always had results from PPC, but you'll generally try a lot of things and a few of them will work. So I think it's a case of, from the early days, if you're just getting started, be prepared to try maybe three or four things in the first instance, but then instantly double down on the first thing where you get a little glimmer of hope, where you see that working, because it's all too easy to spread your time and your budget and your attention across multiple channels. But the chances are one of those is going to work for you better than the others. And it's best that you run your experiments, you really double down and put the time and attention into that one that does work.
You'd also mentioned the possibility of outsourcing this. Like, what sorts of things should you avoid or at least be cautious of or mindful of when you are trying to outsource this? I mean, I think that there's the two different buckets that you pointed out. Like, if you're very early on, the founder should really be doing this. But at some point, the founder really kind of needs to take a step back because there's other areas of the business that you need to pay attention to. You can't always be focused on that customer development because there's engineering or support or various other things that need to happen. But in terms of the sales process itself or the outbound process and outsourcing it, like, what sorts of things should people be cognizant of when they're looking at specifically at that?
So I think one of the key things to realize is there's a difference between knowing that you should be doing something and actually doing it. And I've fallen into this trap plenty of times where I know I should be making, you know, I've set myself a goal of maybe 20 or 30 calls a day, either for customer development or for sales. But if you're not getting around to doing that, one, because you may be procrastinating because you hate the idea of, you know, sort of telemarketing. Telemarketing is, for the wrong person, it can be soul destroying. You get a lot of rejection. You feel like, this is a waste of my time. I should be coding or I should be designing. If you're not getting the job done, I think at some point you have to be realistic and face the fact that this thing that is terrifying you does need to be done by someone. So I think in that case, even if it's not you, it's better to have someone doing this. But you do really need to have a grip on the process from the really, really early days, because you need to be able to kind of tweak that script on the fly. You need to know what are the pain points that you are trying to get people or hook people with in order to get a response from them. You need to have an idea of what your script looks like. So before we start telemarketing, we always send them our sort of telemarketing guide, which is, one, it's kind of our script, but more importantly, it's an explanation of each point in that script and why we've put that in there. And it's simply for the fact that everybody has their own different style of sales, and we don't want people to read from a sheet of paper, but they do need a script because there are certain pieces of information we need to get from each call. So we give people the objective of each call, what we're trying to do. We tell them, look, these are the things that's necessary to get from this call in terms of information. And these are the things that if you have rapport or if you're able to get it, get them as a bonus, but don't worry too much about it because we'll get these on later contacts with that person. And this is the main objective or the main goal of the call. So being able to put that together, it requires you to kind of, you know, hit the ground and work on the front lines for a bit and have enough experience to know what you want from that agency.
Yeah, I think having a goal for each call is an extremely valuable piece of advice, just because it's very easy to get on a call where you're trying to talk to somebody about whatever it is that you're developing. You know, you're in that customer development phase and want to run an idea by somebody or float some mock-ups in front of them and say, hey, what do you think about this? Like, having that goal of the call in mind in advance of having the call really helps you dig into it and get to the heart of the matter, rather than just having this open-ended thing where at the end of the call, you're kind of lost and you really don't know what to say because you didn't have a goal in mind to start with. So that's a huge piece of information.
I speak to a ton of people who have a SaaS company that have just started up, and they try outbound. So they'll get a list, a small list of maybe 50 people, and they'll start calling for that list. Now, typically what happens is they have their own responsibilities, they have life getting in the way, and they have things throughout the day to do. So they'll probably get maybe 2-3 hours in the day where they start calling, but because they hate it or because they're not used to it. And I think if we spoke to 10 founders, I'd say 8 hate the idea of cold telemarketing, and that's probably why they're not doing that, you know, as a job or a profession. But because you've got this sort of anxiety about it, that hour or 2 hours that you spend calling, it feels like a lifetime. And what will usually happen with the other distractions that come in, you make 15, 20 calls, you then force yourself to do that again, like a second day, and you make 15, 20 calls. You haven't perfected your script, you've just started, you've done no kind of tweaking, testing different messages. And then as a result, you get no results. And a lot of people get disheartened and give up, and they're like, ah, you know what, we've tried outbound and it doesn't work for us. But it's ridiculous. Like, if you got 40 clicks from a PPC ad or a Facebook ad and you didn't convert, you think nothing of it. You just think, you know, I need more traffic, obviously. But it's exactly the same with calls. You do need to make a significant volume of calls, especially if you've not tested your script or your message or your approach out yet. And it really is in the early days. It's about churning through and getting data, knowing that you're probably not going to convert that efficiently, but you need to do it in order to work out what your messaging is. I mean, I always advise using cold email in the first instance as a way of kind of breaking through that resistance to testing and finding out what the message is. So if you're hesitant about making phone calls, find 1,000 people that fit your target criteria, and over days do 100 emails a day, or maybe batches of 50 emails a day. See the responses you do get and tweak your emails until you start to hit on a message that works, and then go on to making a few phone calls with that same messaging.
Yeah, one recommendation I'd have in that situation is that either during the call itself or immediately after each call, write down all the notes and stuff that are associated with it. If you have the flexibility or the leeway or relationship with people to like make the notes on the call, that's great. Otherwise, recording them is a good option as well, because then you can always go back to them. Maybe even have those audio calls transcribed so that you can go back to them later. But I mean, I've got 75, 100 pages worth of notes just from calls that I did early on with Bluetick, and I can always go back to each one of those calls and say, what is it that we talked about and what are the important pieces that I took away from that conversation, and use that to tweak future conversations, or I could hand that entire file to like a copywriter and say, hey, these are all my notes on all the different calls, and this is what people told me that were important. It allows you to have that base of information to kind of move forward with, because if you don't capture it at the time, you're probably going to forget like 90% of it, which is terrible, because then you can't even transmit it to somebody else.
For sure. When we train new reps, we actually tell people not to make notes on the call. So every bit of dialing software now should record. We have our own dialer in the CRM that we built, and it just uses Twilio, and then we grab the recording. But the reason why we tell people not to make notes is we find that the minute people make notes, unless they're like, they've got this weird Rain Man-like ability, they can do one thing well. And if they're making notes at the time, they're probably thinking about the notes they're making, and they're not listening to the person on the other end of the phone. And one of the key things, if you're going to get a result, is to be able to listen and take the little subtle cues, the points when people maybe switch off when you've said a certain thing, or the points when people get excited, or you've got them on a hook when you've said something else. It's really important to listen and to try and find that person's pain or that person's problem. And I think being fully present on that call and being able to do that, you tend to see a better result. So we get our reps to listen to the recordings and then transcribe the recordings themselves later if they think there's something pertinent in there. But we generally tell them not to write stuff down while they're on the call.
Justin, all this has been fantastic information. I really appreciate you coming on. I think that's about time to wrap us up. Where can people find you if they want to learn more? You know, Twitter, email, website? What do you got?
Sure. So you can catch me on Twitter, twitter.com/flipfilter, which is an old name I've had for ages and like many people want to change, but it's been with me for too long, so I can't. You can also find me at exitplan.co/digitallywed, or you can catch me at optimumfeedback.com.
Well, again, thanks for coming on. If you have a question for us, you can call it on our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt for We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.